Hello and welcome back to the Work Happy podcast from Silicon Reef. I'm delighted to welcome Sam Blizzard to this episode. Sam, it's great to have you with us today. And please, could you just introduce yourself for the listeners and tell us about the role that you fulfill at Fortnum & Mason?
Hi, Alex. Wonderful to be with you today on the Work Happy podcast. Thank you for having me. I fulfill a role which encompasses Fortnum's employer brand, and I look after the content that's related to Fortnum's employer brand. I was working for Fortnum & Mason as the head of internal comms on a fixed-term contract, and my role evolved to encompass some of the external communication about the way we represent ourselves as an employer. I won't say any more at this point, but I'm quite happy to discuss and articulate that further.
Perfect. No, that'd be great. Thanks, Sam. And you and I were just saying before we hit record that I don't actually get to meet many of our guests on the show face-to-face, but I'm really pleased to say that we have actually met face-to-face in the fantastic tea room salon, the tasting room at Fortnum & Mason, when we were talking about the topic of loneliness in the workplace. And what struck me was it really is an iconic building, and it's got history dating back to 1707. And I think in your role as well, can you just describe to the listeners what it's like to be based in such an iconic workplace? Does it inspire you to fulfill your role as well?
That's a great question. I didn't think you were going to ask me that, but I'm kind of glad you did in a way, because listening to you talk, I was thinking about when I first joined Fortnum & Mason. And there is definitely a pinch yourself moment where, to people who work at Fortnum & Mason, they'll understand this, but when we come to work in the morning, we don't come through the front door as customers would. We come through as our staff entrance, which is actually in Jermyn Street. And I think one of the first times I did that, I met a colleague as I was going into the building, and we walked across the ground floor at Piccadilly while the doors were closed. And it's a moment of sort of wonderment, you know, the red carpet, the colourful products, the history of the building, which you get to learn quite quickly. I mean, I have a vivid memory of, as most people do, routinely posting that I changed jobs. You know, I'd just started at Fortnum & Mason. And I sort of thought it would be fun to put a couple of facts in. You know, I was tickled by the fact that Fortnum & Mason had invented the Scotch egg in 1738, that in more recent times they'd put beehives on their roof and that they made their own honey, which they actually sell on their ground floor.
That's amazing.
And yeah, you know, that I was kind of gobsmacked by the response that LinkedIn post got. And what it made me realize was how interested people are in the Fortnum's brand. And then I guess probably from that point, I started thinking about, well, what would my particular insight be? You know, and people are always the thing I've loved most about working in any organization or any sector. So I started thinking about it through that lens. But yeah, certainly you are aware of the history, and we have a full-time archivist, a lady by the name of Dr. Andrea Tanner, who is incredible, and she's a way better storyteller than I am, and I'm quite happy to say that for the record. And she inspires me, and so I like spending time with her, and I just recently made a film about her, actually, which I'm hoping to share some excerpts of later this year.
Sounds great. And again, so you just mentioned that, and we did say at the top of the show around your role being employer brand content producer. Now, I did a little LinkedIn search for anybody else that has that job title, and it is actually quite unique. So I did go and have a little bit of research around it. So you mentioned about you went from a fixed term contract, but lots of the audience of the show are internal communicators and HR. Can you just tell us a little bit about how that changed and how does it differ from what we understand a traditional internal communications role to be?
Yeah, I mean, I've spent the majority of my 25-year career in communication, you know, and a large bulk of that in internal comms. I think one thing I would say is that Fortnum & Mason aside, which I'll come on to, but a trend I'd sort of definitely aware of in the last 5 to 10 years is a merging of internal and external communications. I think that's the first thing, you know, and that's been happening for quite a while. And you see this sort of cross-fertilization. You know, I did notice this a few years ago, people who'd been in PR, who would previously not have crossed the divide and come to be heads of internal comms or directors of comms or directors of internal comms. So there's been a lot of movement both ways. And I think internal comms people and employee engagement specialists have been learning from people in PR and marketing and vice versa. And then, COVID was a seismic moment for anybody who had sort of developed a career in internal communications, because we were suddenly taken very seriously, as very serious, credible people who could make a real impact in moments of crisis. And I think it was a real turning point. But I also think that in terms of my own sort of role, the second trend that's definitely been developing, and I've seen it with both HR and comms professionals around me, is there's been a real sort of merging of those sort of specialisms in a way which makes a lot of sense. Funny enough, on my own podcast, which I started during the pandemic, the Comms from the Shed podcast, my first guest was Drew McMillan, who at the time was the director of comms at British Airways. And he just sort of said that due to his actual experience on the job, he saw himself much more as an HR professional, even though his entire career was in communications. And that's because he was in all of these serious situations and conversations at a leadership level, which involved people, their well-being, their future, their engagement, their retention. And sadly, in terms of a lot of the examples he shared with me, the great difficulty they had in having to lay people off at that time. And so what kind of happened in terms of my own sort of 18-month journey at Fortnum's is that I came in as head of internal communication, and I sort of became fascinated by many things, I think, about people and the way Fortnum's represented itself as a brand. And I suppose to some extent, I saw maybe a gap in the story, because I saw a very diverse population of people. And I mentioned things like, history, but I was very interested in the present as well. And someone told me quite early on that there were 60 different nationalities in Fortnum's, and quite a small workforce, in that sense. And I just thought that was incredible. And I genuinely thought it would surprise people to shine a light on that and represent that more authentically and more accurately and more regularly. And I was actually, you'll be interested in this, because I know that Silicon Reef and a lot of, having met you, as you mentioned, face-to-face, and just your interest in tech innovation. We were slightly limited by internal channels when I joined, because the intranet had limitations. And some of the channels, the classic corporate channels and suites of channels that you would expect, the infrastructure wasn't quite there. It wasn't ready yet. And so I had to start using LinkedIn to some extent as a kind of proxy intranet, because I actually found that I was making a lot of connections, often with up to several hundred people on that platform. And so it was kind of serendipitous in a way, because I just started charting my own journey, which was one of joy and wonderment. This is my first day walking through the ground floor. This is the first day I've experienced the tea salon. This is me meeting someone in warehouse for the first time, whatever it might have been. And I could sort of see that there was potential for the Fortnum's story to be told in more detail. And I think quite early on in my time at Fortnum's, I could sort of see a sort of future where you mentioned that a unique role could be created. And luckily enough, I was able to have that conversation with the organization. And that kind of brings my story right up to date.
Brilliant. And I think when you and I did meet, we talked about the channels that you have internally within Fortnum's. And you mentioned to me about the lack of an intranet. And I think, like you said, the serendipitous opportunity it gave you to have that external voice to really communicate that employer brand. I want to explore that a little bit more, because I know obviously employer brand is important to internal, but it's also really important for talent attraction and making external people aware about what you're doing as an organization. And you already mentioned about diversity and inclusion and the 60 plus different nationalities that you have within Fortnum's. Do you work closely with HR to get that feedback? And do they encourage and say and advocate, you're saying what you're doing there, Sam, in terms of raising our brand to bring new talent in and attracting that? Is that a conversation that happens behind the scenes and encourages you and motivates you to do more?
Yeah. I mean, it's a conversation that happens on a daily basis. I mean, just from a structural point of view, I'm part of the HR directorate. So from a reporting line, you know, I report into the director of talent and culture, Alexandra Buxton, and all of my peers are actually HR. I mean, I'm in the minority, you know, along with Vicky Merriweather, who came back to run internal communications. So a lot of the partnerships I have, I suppose, a lot of the collaborative work I do is with, you know, our head of talent or our business partners in HR. And so most of my kind of thinking, whether we're looking at Glassdoor in terms of employee reviews, whether we're looking at the narrative for 2023 on LinkedIn, whether we are thinking about, you know, our ability to attract and retain the best talent via a website like Indeed, or, you know, whether we're thinking about the way we represent the job opportunities and careers people can develop on our own .com site, you know, within the career section there. Every conversation I have is with an HR sort of professional. So it's very much seen through that lens. I suppose the specialism of content and the storytelling, that's informed by kind of marketing, I suppose, and PR and, you know, your ability to be journalistic and commercial in that sense. But the kind of nuances of it are very much informed by the kind of latest thinking in HR. Without going into too much detail, because I could probably talk about that
at length, you know. And the storytelling part. So again, in looking on the Fortnum & Mason website, I understand that you kind of have four pillars, and you have people, products, packaging, and planet. And you actually have a quarterly recognition and celebration with the Fortnum Values Award.
Yeah.
Is this where storytelling is even more important to industries and organizations where you have a high number of kind of on the ground shop floor people? And how do you make that come to life through the mediums that you have available to you?
Yeah, it's a timely question, that one, funnily enough, because our Values Awards nominations came out this week. You know, we had an email reminder early today, actually, about don't forget to nominate people in the Fortnum & Mason Values Awards, which are internal. You asked if storytelling also is more important where we've got a lot of employees on the ground, you know, on the shop floor or back of house, in our case, in retail and hospitality. I mean, yes and no, in a way, because my most recent experiences were in the retail and construction sectors. But even if you think about government or fast-moving consumer goods or mainly office-based environments, I think it's vital to feel that there's a human experience at the heart of it all. So human beings with all of their quirks, their idiosyncrasies, their talent, you know, and dare I say it, their flaws and vulnerability as well, that's actually what's driving your success. And I think people are becoming more and more aware of that. You know, that sense is heightened all the time with each passing year. And I think it's actually, from a storytelling point of view, I think it's actually about capturing what's unique and what the essence of your employer brand is. So what's at the heart of it, you know? Like, what's the special sauce, as a chef might say, for your particular brand? I think as well, you know, from a sort of organizational point of view, I think you also have to persuade leaders to engage employees' hearts first and make them care, you know, draw an emotional response. I mean, I would kind of say, you know, off the record maybe, what, you know, why go for strategy and logic first and expect hearts to follow? You know, that's not a logical sequence to me. It never has been. And I think my focus has sharpened more and more on that as time's gone on in my career. You know, why should employees want to come to work for your company or your brand? And I think stories connect people in such an instinctual way from a very young age. You know, we've kind of been pre-programmed to absorb stories and understand them in a way that rarely requires explanation. So if you have to explain your story or your mission or your values internally, I think that's your first problem right there. And do employees really believe that you're talking directly to them? You know, that's the question fundamentally. So connecting the ambition of the company to people like them so that they see people represented in those communications that look like them, speak like them, represent their peer group, their demographic, their experiences. That's kind of critical, I would say.
I completely understand that. And I think the relatability and, you know, seeing a story that you're telling about an event that you've hosted, you were telling me that you had a charity organization that you support into the workplace yesterday on the shop floor to give like an inspirational talk about how Fortnum's are supporting them. And again, like you said, it doesn't necessarily need you to say, and this relates to our values in this way, and this relates to our four pillars, because they should just feel part of that. You don't need to be saying that. And do you think that's where the term employer brand is really kind of founded from, that branding kind of the employee employment experience that they're going through, rather than it being something that's forced upon them? You actually just naturally want them to see how they fit into it and they feel part of it without it being, like you said, strategy driven and driven by leadership.
Yeah, definitely. I'm with you in the sense that, and I do agree with what you said first up there. I'm not a great believer in having to explain or articulate things a great deal, you know, because it's that thing of, by explaining it, you almost explain it away. You know, if you put a label on something, it kind of kills it. You know, the moment of inspiration dies. And I think that's very important. I mean, look, you know, employer brand, I think, I suppose in its original definition, you might say that it was about, you know, the combination of a company's vision, mission, culture. And from the outside, so from the outside looking in, people will see how an organization showcases its job opportunities and how it develops its people. And your corporate brand has always been about, you know, how slick you can be in presenting products and services and that kind of thing. I think the employer brand now, in terms of where it may be going, is that it will be much more sharply focused on image. And I don't mean to say that in an inauthentic way, but I think, you know, reputation and value is going to be much more highly, you know, prized. And I mentioned earlier that to me, internal comms and external comms have been sort of bleeding or merging. And it's important, I think, for comms people to have experience of both, certainly if you're starting out in your career. And I think the reason for that is because a kind of penny dropped for me a few years ago that they're both about reputation management. You know, external comms is about managing reputation externally, and internal comms is about managing your reputation internally with people, you know, and that's about authenticity. So a highly positive employer brand in that sense will help you have the edge over the competition in terms of attracting and retaining the best employees on the market. You know, what value can you offer employees over and above other organizations? Because the, you know, the battle is on and the struggle is real, kind of thing. And during COVID-19, I mentioned that internal comms was in the vanguard and finally had a seat at the table, in inverted commas, much more in the conversation. But I think where this is kind of headed is that in future, companies are going to have to just keep being more and more transparent, more authentic, will be held under much closer scrutiny, whether that's about sustainability, whether it's about their DE&I policies, whether it's about flexibility, hybrid working, you know, how's the dust going to settle on that? People just demanding more. And so I think the more authentic a face you can present to the marketplace, the more successful you're going to be in employer brand terms. I read a brilliant report actually by Gartner in the last few weeks, which was sort of saying that it was an American valuation, but I think it's probably fairly applicable to the UK market as well. But their estimate was that organizations are spending roughly £2,500 per employee on the employee experience, if you want to define it as that. So, you know, that's an investment which is estimated to only go up in 2023. And so the focus, 2022 is a massive thing about retention, and we were very much in the eye of that storm because retail and hospitality really suffered as sectors post-COVID. And so with the focus kind of continuing there, the other thing that you're going to see is kind of establishing and retaining trust is just going to get harder and harder.
And that trust part, and thinking about how you use open platforms like LinkedIn for messaging and communication, And you also mentioned how organizations are looking to that image and how their external image is portrayed. Thinking about how you protect your brand from external kind of conversations, like you said, you use Glassdoor for like getting reviews from existing employees, so it attracts new talent. What can be done, and how do you protect the brand if your channel is mostly through an external platform such as LinkedIn or others, but you're encouraging your staff to engage with it in that kind of open fashion, which is building that trust, like internally, because you are trusting people to say appropriate things, but there's that risk. And I think it comes back to what you talked about with where employer brand is going and how image is so important. Is there not a risk by externalizing some of those things that you are opening yourself to that brand not being so protected through conversations that might happen in a public domain?
Yeah, and it's a kind of two-part question. So I think let me deal with the risk first, because this one has been discussed and it's been evolving for many years. Theoretically, it is a risk. Logic would determine that it is. I must say, though, it's not a risk that keeps me awake at night. It's not one that I worry about. And the reason I don't worry about it is that all my experience, and certainly my experience of the last 10 years, shows me that whenever you give people trust and you hand that trust over, they never let you down, very rarely. It's an anomaly, you know, it's a real outlier. I mean, and the incidents that I can recollect in the last decade where that's happened are extremely rare. I could only name one or two. And they're always the same kind of thing. It's where people will jump on an external platform to maybe complain or express discomfort or unhappiness about their employer when they should have used an internal channel. So mm-hmm. I suppose what I'm saying is that they've used a wholly inappropriate channel for the message that they're trying to convey, you know. So for example, you know, expressing discomfort on Facebook rather than speaking to your line manager, for example, without going into detail of any sensitive cases. But I mean, the thing about it is that I think people are, you know, in the organizations I've worked in most recently in the last 10 years, you know, either in construction or retail, I find that people are so proud to do the jobs that they do and continue to do. They just have so much positive experience to share. They just don't have the bandwidth for negative things. It's an interesting point you make. I think the point about protect, and by the way, I think the other thing about that is maybe if we talk about de-risking, I think what's incumbent upon communications people, and I think maybe I've made the point about internal and external bleeding or merging at least twice in this interview already, is because I kind of stopped seeing myself as an internal communicator quite a long time ago. And I was at the Simply Communicate conference last year. There was a 2-day event, and it was all about employee experience. And I encouraged other internal communicators to do that too, because I think it's kind of limiting, you know. It kind of suggests that you're only comfortable in certain media, or, you know, that there are very defined rules. I think it's a lot more fluid now than it's ever been. And then, of course, there's the issue of sort of personal brand as well, which is a whole other thing. But it's a similar thing, you know. It's about authenticity and reputation. So I think you can sort of de-risk this point about, partly you're encouraging your employees to express themselves in an external space, because I think what you're getting to know as many people in the organization as possible at the earliest stage possible, and actually cultivating and nurturing those relationships, building that network, having a very healthy, open and honest, regular communication with that network, that really helps. And of course, a lot of those people are in non-communication roles. I don't think I've actually answered your question about protecting the brand yet, but just on that point, I've sort of had this sort of thought in my mind for a while now about, you know, we roll the red carpet out for customers, you know, or clients or whatever industry we're in. It's like, you know, we bestow greatness on those that we serve. And yet the most dangerous thing you can do is not roll it out for employees. You know, if there's a disparity between those two critical audiences or stakeholders, then you've got a big problem. This is where the problem lies. And, you know, and I say that as somebody that used to work for the John Lewis Partnership, you know, where people had very high and lofty ideals about what their employer should be to them. and people took it extremely seriously. And if you fell short, they would express it, and they had multiple ways and channels to do so. That's another story, possibly. But, you know, iconic brands do have reputations to protect. And I think part of this is a little bit connected to the first part of this answer, Alex. You know, I think you actually protect the brand, I would say, increasingly by inviting people in to some degree. You know, I don't think you have to show everything. I don't think you have to peel back every layer of the onion. But brands can be damaged in a funny kind of way if, as I mentioned, there's too much of a gap between customer and employee experience, but also if it looks like you have something to hide, if there are big gaps in your story, or there are big gaps in representation, or you're not representing the lived experience on the ground. You know, people will smell a rat very quickly because there's so much scrutiny now. So I think if the reputation is really strong externally, but the lived experience is increasingly poor internally, you're damaging your brand from the inside.
Yeah.
And of course, your customers will feel the effects. That's the reality. So being part of the story in an inclusive and compelling way for employees is feeling that, for them, I think it's feeling like they own part of that story, you know? But if your experience isn't represented and it doesn't feel genuine, then the brand's going to suffer.
I can see that. A lot of your posts that you make, and I go back to that, you said the term authenticity, about, you know, building relationships and bringing your authentic self to work. I see some of the posts that you put out on LinkedIn, you know, about family, about, you know, having a difficult journey into work, perhaps, and needing to take 10 minutes to yourself just to say, God, I just need that 10 minutes sit down in a coffee shop to really kind of de-stress and like just to, you know, prepare myself for the day ahead. They're really authentic posts. And I think one of the things that we saw happening, particularly over COVID, and I remember speaking to some people from the co-op group and also TUI, I think it was, that said leaders were coming on to their social channels, be it, you know, Yammer or be it Teams or like a kind of live event internally. And they were sat there in their lounge or sat there in their dining room at home, and people really felt that authentic self being brought to work by leadership. And I think that brought a lot of relatability from employees to their employers, or leadership in particular. Hope that doesn't get lost, because, you know, we're starting to go back to that world where we're just going back into normality or the new hybrid world. And I think the things that you're putting out via LinkedIn as a platform, you said in your podcast, actually, in your most recent podcast with Vicky, you talked about how bringing your authentic self and some of the LinkedIn posts that you make that are really you just showing some vulnerability, perhaps, as well. I think employers and employer brand, it's that representation of this is who we are. We're okay with the fact it's not all, you know, roses, and we have things that go on we're not happy about, but sharing that, it's that authenticity that I think that people want to see associated with their employer brand today. And I think what you're doing and how you communicate that through LinkedIn really shows that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, vulnerability is an interesting concept in business, because commercial success has always been intrinsically linked to strength and power and ambition. And vulnerability is not about that, but it is a mirror to strength, you know. And I think the penny has dropped, obviously, that, you know, the vulnerable leader can in some way curiously show more strength by showing more vulnerability. And, you know, there's a balance to be struck in all of this as well, because when I worked in the construction sector, I think it's fair to say that there was an operational audience, there was an operational group of employees who were really suffering on the ground, who never stopped, never went into furlough, were never told to stay at home. They never stopped working throughout the entire period of the pandemic, you know. And, you know, I would argue that they put themselves at risk quite significantly. And the comms challenge at that time was to navigate through very different audiences. You know, people who are building hospitals, trying to accelerate the building of hospitals to get them over the line, not just to treat cancer patients, but actually deal with a global emergency that people had never seen the likes of before. And yet there was also an office-based community. And the challenge of that was quite significant, because, you know, people would be posting on Yammer about spending time with their kids and, you know, home baking, you know, and then the men and women in hard hats are out on the ground risking their lives at the same time. And, you know, I think you have to be extremely sensitive to that. But I think one thing that's been very sort of positive in the last 2 or 3 years, certainly where employer brand is concerned, is that, you know, increasingly, and I hope this continues, people feel more comfortable talking about the challenges of balancing every aspect of their lives, you know, their working lives and their personal lives. And it's becoming more acceptable to talk about vulnerability and needing support. And I actually think there's a bit of an opportunity here for employers, you know, because I would say, you know, in my lifetime, in my working life, I've seen in the background that the complete erosion of trust in all of the pillars of our society, all of the major institutions, you know, we see it in the news now every day, every week, you know, lack of faith and trust in the government, the police, judiciary, politicians. And actually, you see people taking more comfort in the safety and security and job satisfaction that an organization can provide for them. And certainly, we became very important sources of information for our employees, because when COVID, you know, and sort of the voices of authority of the past, like politicians, failed to provide clarity and sensible answers in these really tough and challenging times, people often look to their employer. And so there is an opportunity there, you know, around all of this, both for people to feel that they can express more of the things that challenge them in balancing their work and personal lives, which have been merging anyways, as you and I know.
Yeah.
Because of the nature of technology and its ubiquitous nature and how that's all accelerated. COVID accelerated that further. But I think, you know, organizations can harness that to positive effect.
And one of the things that I read on your, again, on your website related to diversity and inclusion, I'll just let you read this because I found it really relatable. And it actually kind of sums up nicely the work that you're doing in communicating this internally. But Fortnum Mason commitment to creating an inclusive culture that nurtures belonging. Our ambition is to create happy, engaged and empowered teams with a strong sense of belonging and trust, and to be a place where our leaders foster an inclusive culture. I think all of the things that we talked about there, it really hits home for the whole diversity and inclusion statement that Fortnum have. And it really sounds like you're living it and communicating it through your storytelling. What would be your top three takeaways for listeners to take away from this, and related to storytelling and employer brand?
Yeah, so it's a good question. And one thing, I just want to touch on something you said about diversity and inclusion there. And I also want to be very transparent with you and with all of your listeners and say that you wouldn't find anyone in Fortnum's, in the leadership team or management or supervisors on the shop floor, that would say we're there yet, you know, where diversity and inclusion is concerned. You know, it's a journey, and we are still at the start of a very nuanced and challenging journey. So I kind of wanted to make that point too, you know, that we're all a work in progress.
Yeah.
And there's no complacency in that regard, even though it's a joy for me to try and shine a light on it. The top three takeaways for listeners on storytelling. I did give this some thought beforehand. And again, I think the first sort of principle, I suppose, I live by, and it relates to something I talked about earlier, is that you have to get to know, I mean, you know, it sounds like a trite thing. It's not. You have to get to know as many people in your organization as possible. And that starts on day one. And, you know, it's not something you should put off as a communicator. And it's also about priorities as well. Because the easiest thing I think you can do, especially if you're in a sort of senior communications role, is just turn up to endless meetings, you know. And that's great, I suppose, to some extent, because you're learning and you're educating yourself. And to some extent, you need one-to-ones to understand the organization and its culture. But you have to be prepared to put those hours in. And it has to be high on the priority list quickly. And I mentioned finding ambassadors in your organization. Often In fact, the majority I've worked with increasingly over the years, I've been in known communications roles. So they're kind of outliers in the field. You know, who are they? You know, it's incumbent on you to find those people and nurture that network. I think point two, in terms of the sort of takeaways or the top three for me, I suppose it's about coming into an organization and understanding it. But I always look at the story an organization's telling externally. And one of the things that was great about Fortnum's, I think, was that the kind of higher purpose is really about making people feel good. You know, it's about joy being at the heart of everything, whether that's about joy giving things, you know, extraordinary food and drink, if it's about experiences, it's about kind of happiness and magic moments. And so it's something that everyone can relate to and aspire to. Especially in these, you know, often, let's be honest, quite dark, kind of challenging times, you know. People are worried about being able to, you know, keep the lights on and, you know, keep their energy bills down, or people are going to food banks. It's like, what small moment of joy can we provide in their lives to shine a little bit of light in? So I think that really works. And I thought about why that was successful and why it had been so successful over such a long time. And then you sort of think, okay, you know, is the internal story as successful? Is it based on authentic human stories? Is there a disconnection? If so, where's the disconnection? I talked about rolling the red carpet out for customers and then rolling the red carpet out for employees. And, you know, my colleagues and peers in the internal comms team have been doing some wonderful work either side of Christmas. They masterminded a campaign about the 25 days of Christmas, which was all about employee appreciation. And then we kicked off January with Employee Appreciation Week, which again was just all about moments of just feel good factor stuff for employees to feel connected. And then we deferred our sort of Christmas party into January. So it culminated with this big party in a venue at Oxford Circus. So, you know, and how are you packaging all that up? Because it's one thing to sort of say, look, we're going to do things for people, but that requires thought. And again, I think we're a work in progress. I don't think we're there yet. So, yeah, I think one is get out, know the people, network, find ambassadors, nurture that relationship. Two is about external story versus internal, and what's the red carpet kind of equivalent for employees. And I think the final part is kind of related. My sort of third thing is related, I suppose, to what I've been saying in point two there, which is, you know, you have to inspire people and you have to take them with you from a storytelling point of view. You know, I realized quite early on at Fortnum's is it's not just my story. You know, I sometimes get people saying, oh, I loved reading your stories on LinkedIn. And I met a chap from the Felix Project yesterday who said as much, but it's a collective story. I'm very conscious of I'm just one person of many, and actually it's a 300-year story. And, you know, it's incumbent on me to represent that story well. But it's that thing. I remember that thing we used to talk about in John Lewis, actually, about trying to leave the organization in a better shape than you found it.
Yeah.
You know, always to try and leave something better than the situation you sort of discovered. And, you know, related to this sense of inspiring people, making them feel good, is, you know, the element of surprise, I think, is kind of underrated. I think when people find things out about your organization that surprise them in a nice way, they love it. You know, and I don't know if the diversity of Fortnum's population was surprising to people, or just that it was just, maybe it was an unknown, you know, and I'm not saying that's one story of many. But I think if you can surprise people at points, you know, it's not a card you can play all the time, but if you can surprise yourself, challenge yourself, tell stories that have never been told before, surprise the people that you're putting on the pedestal, surprise them about their own stories, like make them understand that their own story is much more interesting than even they had considered, surprise your leaders pleasantly, no nasty surprises, and just apply that kind of discipline. You know, when I was trained as a journalist many, many moons ago, when I finished my kind of English degree, you know, never forget it, the lecturer said to us, you know, what's the job of a journalist or a newspaper editor. And of course, lots of eager and kind of green students put their hands up and they say, oh, it's to inform, it's to educate, it's to, you know, all these very worthy answers. And of course, the cynical old sort of journalism lecturer sort of chuckles away at all this and then says, no, you're all wrong. You're there to sell newspapers, you know?
Yeah.
I never forgot that because it's about hooking people's attention and keeping them interested. And I mean, that's the challenge in a world which is about, you know, proliferation of channels, fragmentation of message, 24/7 comms, limited attention spans. You know, the more authentic you can be, the more chance you've got of somehow still being able to engage people against that backdrop and in that landscape, you know.
I think that's a fantastic answer. And thank you for that, Sam. I think it all started, and the very first point that you mentioned was get to know your people. Because if you don't know your people, how can you tell stories that they can relate to and you want them to relate to what you're talking about? And there's some moments of surprise. It might be one of those people that you've met, you know, behind the scenes or on the shop floor that actually you're going to tell a story about them that relates to the family business that is Fortnum's. And that's the element of surprise for everybody. Yeah, I think that's a brilliant story. Lastly, I saw in one of your recent posts that you're a fan of Ikigai. I saw that the Japanese secret to living a long and happy life. So as we know, this is called the Work Happy Podcast. I and our listeners would like to know, what does Work Happy mean to you?
Well, it's a big question and it's a broad question. I didn't think you were going to ask me about the Ikigai. I'm very impressed that you've done your research on me and you're tracking me, which is great. I mean, you know, yeah, I was really inspired by that book and just the fact that people in certain parts of rural Japan and Okinawa, I think it is.
Yeah.
There's something about their diet. There's something about their sense of community. There is something just about their humanity and attitude to life. You know, they laugh a lot. They're playful. It's very interesting to me. And I think, as you will have seen in the post, that's why I jump into freezing cold lakes and
yeah.
do other slightly off-beam things to try and keep myself vital. But I mean, specifically on Work Happy, we were talking a minute ago about how our work and personal lives have blurred in the last few years. And that's been accelerated, as I mentioned, because of the ubiquitous nature of technology, mobile phones and, you know, the constant presence of phones and tablets and Wi-Fi.
And notifications pinging at you all the time to say, look at me, look at me, look at me.
Absolutely. And I turned the notifications off for this interview, which, you know,
yeah.
which is a blessed relief. But, you know, I think what we're continuing to see from employees, I suppose, and last year was a classic example of this, is that they're putting more demands on the organizations that they work for. So they expect more. They expect a greater degree of understanding of their own personal circumstances. And that's very true if you've ever been a line manager and you are one now. They're demanding flexibility, they're demanding development of their skills and their careers, and they've got less patience, and I would argue less loyalty. Because if there was a big lesson of the pandemic and the fallout of the pandemic, which was still very much happening in 2022, people just realized that they can just go and do other things, you know? Because we were having these conversations a lot last year, and everyone's having them, whatever sector. And where did the people go?
Yeah,
you know, where are they? Why aren't they coming back? You know, people said, yeah, it's because of Brexit, or it's, you know, like I mentioned, the airline industry where a lot of people actually retrained as all kinds of different things. And, you know, when people have decided it's not for them, you know, they're not work happy, they've just gone and done other things. I mean, I through circumstances outside of my own control, I found myself between jobs and I started two podcasts. And it's one of the most, you know, we're on a podcast now, but I mean, from a personal point of view, it was one of the most fulfilling and rewarding things I've ever done. You know, I've never been paid for it, but it's just been a wonderful experience, you know. And just to share with your listeners, you know, I've downloaded, you know, 50,000 times, and for one of my podcasts, I developed a big audience in India, for example. I don't know who the people are that are listening in India, but it's a lovely and fascinating thing.
Yeah.
And it's an experience I would never have had if I hadn't tried to do other things. You know, some people have started businesses. we talked about ikigai. People have been trying to develop their sense of purpose. And, you know, I think, I just kind of think work happy. I mean, maybe this is the best way actually to summarize it. I think the best barometer for you is if your people are telling the stories you've helped facilitate, if they're telling those stories on their days off, or they're with friends and family, or they're in social gatherings and dinner parties, you know, if they're on an off work moment, if they're doing that, I think you've probably created your employer brand in a mostly authentic way. And that compels people to do it naturally of their own accord. And that's when I think you're on to a winner. So that's kind of, I think, what it would mean to me ultimately. But I'm not complacent. I think, you know, it's something obviously I think about on a daily basis, because there's just so many stories to tell apart from anything else.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much, Sam, for your time today and for sharing what Work Happy means to you. If the listeners wanted to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do that? And as you've mentioned, please go ahead and plug your podcast as much as you like.
Well, I'm quite happy for people to contact me via LinkedIn, mainly because it's a channel that I look at most days. I think as well, my two podcasts, it's very kind of you to let me mention them. My podcast, which is work-related, or certainly it's about people's vocations and experiences, is called Comms from the Shed, which is a direct link to my LinkedIn profile, which was born out of the pandemic. I'm also a big music lover, and I have a podcast which explores the legacy of the musician Prince, which is called How Can You Just Leave Me Standing in Search of Prince? And I have various fascinating cultural figures on there. And some of my musical heroes are also on there. So that's a lot of fun, but it has a very different feel to it than Comms from the Shed. So thank you for letting me mention those.
That's absolutely fine. And I tell you what was funny, because I went onto my podcast platform and I typed in your name, Sam Blizzard. And then I saw two podcasts. I was like, what about music? And it references Prince. I was like, that must be just be some guy with the same name. And then I saw the picture of the shed and I remember being like, that's the one I want to listen to. And it wasn't until I think I was listening to one of your podcasts and you actually say in my other podcast, I was like, oh my goodness, it is the other one as well. So that's how I kind of got to know you had two. Well, thank you very much, Sam, again, for joining us today. Been a fantastic session with you. And thank you for sharing the story about Fortnum's as well.
Thank you, Alex. Not always easy to articulate what it is you actually do when someone puts it under the microscope, but hopefully it's been insightful and some fun for your listeners too.
It was great to have Sam on the show. After meeting him in person a couple of years ago at an event in Fortnum & Mason, it was obvious then that he was so passionate about Fortnum's diversity and just telling stories. I hope you enjoyed the show. Please continue to tune in for the next episode. If you'd like to leave a review, please do so on your podcast platform. Many thanks. Bye-bye.